This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to The Daily Digest with me, Tishao E, Kelly Anissa and Sharmila Gunnison. Earlier, we asked you whether beauty should mean the standard Western ideals or should we have our own cultural standards? And now, in relation to the story that we're about to discuss, we have a poll on Twitter.
Yes, so we're asking you, what would it take for you to stop using cars to get around the city? 69% of you have voted for improved public transport, followed by 18% of you who said protection from the heat, 10% of you said safer walking and bike lanes, and only 3% of you said that you still prefer cars. And you can join the conversation by tweeting us at BFM Radio, or you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899.
Interesting, a smaller proportion of you only voted for bike lanes.
Yeah.
What we're talking about today is sort of more related to cycling. So according to a poll by the New Straits Times, about half of Malaysians don't seem keen on the idea of using cycling as a mode to get around the cities, you know, whether it's going to work and all that. So some background, NST ran this poll last weekend to gauge response to plans by KL City Hall or DBKL to open bicycle lanes from the city centre to the suburbs as part of an integrated cycling lane initiative. So the poll received 2,400 responses on social media, and it was quite evenly divided. 50% of the respondents said that they would not use the bicycle lane, while 49.8% said that they were interested.
And going by DBKL's plan, the first bicycle lane bridging a major residential area in Wang Semaju and the city centre in KLCC is expected to be up and running in about a year. It will be laid out on the reserves of Sungai Bunus, stretching 4 kilometres between the Wang Semaju LRT station and Jalan Raja Abdullah in Kampung Baru, before feeding into KLCC. So the lane is expected to serve thousands of residents in neighbourhoods within a kilometre of the catchment area. DBKL is expected to break ground on the project in June before bridging other residential areas and the city's cycling network.
So it does sound like a very comprehensive plan, but even this initial move does not look like it will go down very well with many of the city folk. You know, among some of the concerns that came up in that NST poll that readers expressed were, for instance, that pedestrian walkways should first be made more convenient and safe before opening a bicycle lane. The other thing that people brought up was that our current road width is designed to fit a specific number of cars, and an additional biking lane could cause further traffic congestion. And then with the standard of driving in Malaysia, there many cyclists would get hurt.
I kind of agree with that.
Grudgingly.
Yes.
And finally, that and this is a big one, I think, that the weather in KL is not suitable for cycling, especially with all the trees that are increasingly being cut down.
And other readers also pointed out that the existing bicycle lanes in KL have been abused by motorcyclists, posing a danger to pedestrians and tourists. They pointed to the bus lanes as an example. The fact that we have poor enforcement means that these issues never get resolved.
Yeah. And so I wanted to talk to somebody who can tell us more about why cycling is important.
Yeah.
And so when it comes to cycling in a city, you think of this person, Jeffrey Lim. He's a self-professed cycling advocate. He was involved in that project to produce this KL cycling map.
Yes.
If you've seen it around.
People often call him the cycling map guy.
There you go. Jeffrey, the cycling map guy. So I spoke to him this morning to get his views on this story from the NST. Jeffrey, the news that DBKL is planning to open bicycle lanes from the city centre to the suburbs, it's part of an integrated cycling lane initiative. Do you think this is a good move?
Yes, of course. This has been in the plans, I think, since 5 years ago already.
Okay, and how do you think this will work, considering that our road system can be at best described as slightly messy? How will it be to the best advantage of cyclists and drivers?
Well, you got to think of it as that cyclists are part of the road. It's just that probably you don't see them as often and they don't have a big population. But according to the law, they are part of traffic. So by denoting a special lane or some infrastructure for cyclists, it's in a way trying to promote some sort of safety and also a new mode of transport.
And speaking of safety, that along with our climate were some of the main reasons given by readers to the New Straits Times after the paper did a poll and asking them about whether we can, you know, implement this sort of cycling culture in Malaysia. So what are your thoughts on these two factors, safety and climate?
Ah, okay. Well, the same reasons given all the time.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, you have to think that, yes, safety is a big issue, I think, for every road user, not only cyclists, but also for people who walk or even people on motorbikes and so on and so forth. So safety is a big issue, and it's just how we treat each other on the road.
Mm-hmm.
So by right, we should all be safe because everything's been put in place to be caution and so on and so forth. So that is to address that. I think in the real world, yes, you have to be wary. So yeah, cycling infrastructure is in a way to create some buffer and some priority.
What kind of cycling infrastructure provides that safety aspect?
Well, for one, the biggest thing they talk about, the term is traffic calming. So traffic calming is a way of creating a safer environment for active mobility. I call it active mobility because it's not just about cycling. It's also about people who walk, people with different abilities, mm-hmm. different sort of vehicles that you can use that mm-hmm. doesn't use fossil fuel.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you create an environment for them that is safe. So buffer zones, slowing down speeds of traffic, also limiting and minimizing exposure to those traffic as well. So these are ways of creating a safe environment.
Mm. And the climate, that's the other. Yeah.
Well, you have to think that before all of us had cars, before all of us had motorbikes, before we had fossil fuel, all of us walk and all of us cycle. If the older parts of the city, they were all actually built pretty flat and they were cyclists. Everybody had a bicycle. Our country used to produce bicycles right down to the ball bearing. I like to repeat that. But yes, our country comes from a cycling background, if you don't know that. So it's just it's a lifestyle change. We have to understand that when you start cycling, when you start walking, it's a lifestyle change. You can't expect everything to be the same. What was interesting was that this master plan that they did a survey and they asked people, what would it take for you to walk? And 40% of them said, if it was a shaded walkway,
mm-hmm.
40%.
Mm-hmm.
And then 70% said if it was air conditioned. So can you understand how ridiculous that is in a country in the tropics? You know, when it's as simple as carrying an umbrella. So that's we build an environment that we have to that's synthetic. We have to be in aircon. We dress for the aircon, and our cars are all air conditioned. So we are building an environment that we cannot sustain.
You know, the NST article interviewed Peter van der Lans. He's a Dutch cyclist who cycle a lot in this region. He said, I quote, "People here in Malaysia, they're made of sugar. They can't handle anything." He was responding to the comments, I shall say, about the weather. So, I mean, you are right that we used to survive without cars, but we've practically had about two generations now who've only ever known this new mode of transport, you know?
Mm-hmm.
How are we going to change that mindset?
Well, like I said, it's a lifestyle change. I mean, we cannot continue living the way we do because it's unsustainable. If you look at the city now, every day the traffic is even worse because everybody's driving their own car. And we cycle through these cars, all of them are single-occupant vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the amount of energy that we're spending, that's public transportation, but we're not using it to the maximum ability. I think the last report was not even 20% of model share. That was supposed to be at like 40%+ by 2020. So not all of us are still using public transport. Yes, there are still some areas that they can improve, but we have to make a change. You know, we have to walk the talk. We can't just talk about sustainability and we can't just talk about being environmental friendly when we're not doing it.
But do you think there needs to be sort of push from the other side then, like punitive measures to discourage people from owning cars so that they'll be forced to use other modes of transport?
Yes, that's right.
Controversial move.
It is always a controversial move. But if we are conscious enough as a civic society, we would actually make that choice. Every country made that choice. And it's not an easy choice. But the thing is, you have to understand that one of the human nature is that we are creatures of convenience. We always choose the easiest way out or the easiest way. So we have to understand that. We have to make it harder for you to drive cars. We have to make it harder for you to use fossil fuel vehicles and make it easier for people to use active mobility to get around in public transportation, e-hybrid vehicles.
I mean,
so those are important.
What are cities like Amsterdam doing right? I mean, that's one city you think of when you think about cycling.
Political will. I think that is. There were people on the grassroots, they were on the ground, they wanted to make change, and people on top said, let's do it. So that is probably the biggest difference between a lot of countries in that sense. In Malaysia, I think that's the biggest challenge we have, is this political will, because it's not politically favorable to agree to something like this. They did have something like congestion charges, gantry points in the city set up in the 90s, but they never turned it on because, of course, it'd be very unpopular. And, of course, our city, most of our councils, they are appointed, they're not elected. So there is certain agendas that cannot be pushed, and also certain agendas which are limited. So I think, we have to start looking at some political will coming from local councils and more aggressive as well to make this change.
I look at our cities, which seem to be designed purely for cars. The way that roads are put in, highways and all that, and the way that buildings are built around that, I just don't see how we can accommodate cyclists and pedestrians in our cities. What do you think?
You're quite right. I think our city, we had a national transport policy set in place early 80s. This was to coincide with our country, our developing country, to produce automobiles. And everything after that was to the development of that Malaysian dreamer, the house, the car, the job, and so on and so forth. So that's why our built environment now, it has been catered towards the automobile. And so that has to change. We have a highway code, and there's probably very little or nothing even mentioned about this kind of boundaries that we have to set. So I think that has to change. We have to look at it differently. I think Plan Malaysia is going to come out soon, and then, you can't say TBKL is not doing anything. They are doing something. When we set out doing this project with the map, we gave them a simplified map showing 6 key entry points in the city, 3 river networks, 2 inner city loops, and that's how to convert the city into a cycling city. Then after that, we did a report about improving the streets for other users as well. So you can't say that DBK is not doing anything. They're doing something within their timeline, and also not as aggressive, right? So because it's also a lot about public opinion. You have to think that there are still street users. People who drive cars are still street users. So you have to think of the shift, this transition phase.
You talked about...
If it's too aggressive, it's perhaps not as welcoming.
You talked about the role of the grassroots movement to push for that change as well. I mean, I guess what you're doing with the Bicycle Map project, that would be considered a grassroots movement. But do you think there's enough of that at that level?
Yes, I think we're not as organized at that level. I mean, there are no bodies on walking. I think there are some bodies on people with different abilities, PWDA, but there are no bodies on walking. Cycling, there are some bodies, but not really big NGOs. But yes, that's where it lacks, because we are so, like I said, creatures of convenience. We just fall back into letting things happen to us and accepting it. So we have to make that change. But then, of course, the city council also have to act on.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest gap between when people start to voice their opinion
mm-hmm.
and then the city council trying to react. But now it's become so far, you know, people just straight shoot first, ask question later.
Mm. So to help convince us to make this change, could you sum up how does cycling change the experience of living in a city? How does it make this experience better for us?
Well, for one, it's a city that is the capital of Malaysia. And what's interesting is every city has so much life and so much culture. And a lot of the times, I grew up, or you can grow up, not even knowing any of this exists. So it's one way actually knowing of your home. Cycling and walking around is one way of actually getting attached and having a sense of belonging to a place. It, of course, is very healthy, I have to say. Of course, it also creates a lot of positive energy in yourself. So that is, I think, one of the aspects that a lot of people don't understand. This lifestyle right. change has to happen, and you have to make the effort to change.
So that was Jeffrey Lim, a cycling advocate who is with the Bicycle Map Project, which has developed the Cycling KL map. As you mentioned, Shamila, Jeffrey is known as the
cycling guy.
The cycling,
cycling
map,
map guy.
Yeah.
Yes.
So this map is actually a crowdsourced map of cycling routes around the city. And so if you're interested to know more, you can download them from cyklingkl.blogspot.com. So, you know, one of the questions I asked Jeffrey was, what has Amsterdam done right? Because if you've ever visited it, it's really the cyclists dominate the city there.
Yes.
And it's not like, you know, this high-powered extreme biking crowd. It's mothers carrying their kids.
Very everyday, yeah. Like really integrated into their lifestyle.
Yes, people in business suits, you know, they're going to work, that kind of thing. So he mentioned political will backed up by a strong push from the grassroots. So I went to find out some background about this. So back in the 1960s, cars actually were overtaking bikes in Amsterdam, a similar scenario that was playing out in many developing economies after the war.
Oh.
But this was taking a toll on pedestrian safety. And so in 1971, the number of traffic deaths rose to a peak of 3,300. And out of that, more than 400 children were killed. So people just rose up in anger. You know, activists were demanding for action. And one of the movements was called a Stop the Kindermode, or rather, Stop the Child Murder.
Mm.
And they use civil disobedience to make their point. You know, things like members holding bicycle demonstrations, occupying accident black spots, organizing special days during which streets were closed to allow children to play safely. They even cycled with an organ grinder to the house of the Prime Minister to sing songs and ask for safer streets for children.
Yeah. So, you know, these kinds of grassroots movements eventually saw action from the authorities. And in the 1980s, Dutch towns and cities began to introduce measures to make their streets more cycling friendly.
Mm.
So today, the Netherlands boasts at least 22,000 miles of cycling paths, and more than a quarter of all the trips are made by bicycle.
Mm.
And this grassroots movement still exists. The Cyclist Union today has 34,000 paying members.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's a success story.
Yes. So, I mean, just looking across around the room today, Shamila, you and I both don't cycle.
We don't. Well, can't.
Can't
would be the more
cycle.
Accurate term.
Yes. We're the worst people to be commenting on the story. But, I mean, just looking, widening the scope a little bit to also walking, right? Using public transport and just not relying on cars too much.
Mm-hmm.
Kelly, you don't drive.
Yeah.
What would be your wish in terms of just making the navigation around city areas more friendly to non-drivers?
I think heat is a big issue for me. So I agree with the poll in terms of better protection from the heat, because if I were to start cycling today or if I were to cycle to work, I can guarantee you I'll come to work wet and drenched my own sweat.
Mm.
So that is the number one. That is one of the concerns. And the second one, of course, is safety. I don't mind walking to work from the station or anything like that, but I've always been concerned about safety, especially since I used to carry my laptop to work.
Mm.
So that's something that's always bothered me.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I'm actually curious, and I think we don't maybe have enough information on this, on whether these sort of comprehensive cycling plans have had success in cities or countries cities that are more similar to ours. Mm. Because even when we look in Asia, the success stories tend to be places like Japan or Korea, you know, some cities in China where they do enjoy significantly cooler weather than we do, at least for, you know, half of the year.
Mm, yeah.
And Singapore, admittedly, actually has made a lot of headway in terms of cycling paths, but that comes as a package with just comprehensive, you know, comprehensively better public transportation, absolutely, walkways, yep, infrastructure.
Yes.
So I don't think it's the cycling that's driving it, but rather, you know, just giving people options and driving being very expensive.
Yeah. I mean, heat is something that we have to take into account urban planning as well. And if you can cut down on the number of cars, you would reduce urban heat for one, but also just the number of buildings that pop up and how much of heat you're trapping in a city. All of that is this big picture, and I do hope the you know, if there are any master plans, we've heard so much about the DBKL master plan, but how much of that will look at these kinds of issues comprehensively? If we are not committed to that, then you can't change the weather, and it is significant enough for people to to raise up.
And I think Kelly pointed out earlier about enforcement, and that's really important, right? Because there's so many complex interconnected factors, and all of those have to fall into place for this to work.
Yeah. So very quickly, Kelly, we had some comments, I think, on social media.
Yes. So one of you wrote in on WhatsApp and said, better public transport. He's looking, I'm assuming it's a he, looking at Singapore, but I am in sales with an average 250 kilometers travel a day, so I need to drive.
Mm. We'll let you off the hook then. You shouldn't be cycling. Okay. We also have a comment related to our first story earlier, which was, in case you missed it, about how Southeast Asians are still bound by Western ideals of beauty.
So Asma wrote in and said, interesting topic. Yes, non-Westerners are still colonized in our thinking of about beauty, but I think our concept of beauty is to focus less on the physical assets, but more on the aura one exudes to others. We have to redefine what we want to see and feel, and this should include the hidden aspects of beauty.
Great point.
Yes, yes. Well, thank you very much for sending in your thoughts. We've run out of time today, but if you still want to send in your thoughts, you can tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or look us up on Facebook at BFM The Bigger Picture. If you missed any part of the show, you can download the podcast on bfm.my/dailydigest, on our BFM app, or on Spotify. Coming up at 3 p.m. on Front Row, Sharmila will be talking to artist Davinder Singh. On the same note about urban living,
yes,
he has an installation about overdevelopment in KL. So stay tuned for that. But meanwhile, here's Bombay Bicycle Club with Luna on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.